Just as before, he lowered the glass on a gag and palms flat against the concrete, he retched. Blood-tinged fluids expelled from his mouth, splashing onto the concrete. The movement in the puddle directed my attention to about 4 worms wriggling there. Moaning, Barletta backed himself to the wall again.
Fuck! Fuck!
Tell me how you got those cuts on your skin.
Are you crazy?
A cross between a sob and laughter reverberated off the walls.
You put them there, you crazy son of a bitch!
He dug his fingers into his forearm, scratching and scraping until the first red drops appeared.
Just like you put the worms in me, it was you!
Self-harm wasn't unusual in the infected, though only to a certain degree. And as I examined his flank, I supposed it was possible that with some impressive twisting, he could have done it to himself. With the hallucinations he suffered, it wouldn't have surprised me if he'd gotten caught up in a scene inside his head of something attacking him that way. As much as I would have loved to end his suffering and get on with harvesting the toxin, though, it was important to let nature take its course. And it seemed nature had already decided the man's fate. Staring down at the papers strewn across my desk, I tried to make sense of Barletta's behavior. He'd begun to enter the stage of aggression in his illness. The effects of the organism tended to make its victims combative and violent, but his earlier reaction baffled me. My cell phone rang and, recognizing the number as one of my contacts, James, a fellow rook I'd gotten in touch with a while back, I answered it.
Yes? I have to admit, Devrick, this task of finding Angelo De Luca was probably the most challenging yet.
How so?
There's really nothing on this guy. Spent some time in prison. Seems his family cast him out for being something of a loose cannon. Had a few jobs, odds and ends. But his last known location was New York about 4 years ago.
4 years ago? Great. The asshole could have been anywhere. Easing back into my chair, I pinched the bridge of my nose and let out a groan.
Not sure if you saw the news a couple weeks back, James asked, but as of late, the barrage of political bullshit, along with my own preoccupations, had kept me away from television. He was apparently involved in the murder of some bigwig investor out of Massachusetts. Guess his name was smeared in blood on the walls.
You got a picture of this guy?
I got an older mugshot of him. Looks like he was in prison for some drug charges a while back. He was also charged with human trafficking, but prosecutors apparently dropped that because the victim was unwilling to cooperate.
I blew out an exasperated breath. So you have nothing recent?
Aside from that murder a couple weeks ago, no. Sounds like he fucked with the wrong person, and my guess is he got himself killed.
My feelings were mixed on that. Partly relieved that I wouldn't have to track him down and deal with dragging him back here, but also disappointed that I wouldn't have the opportunity to kill him myself. If you could send over the mugshot, that would be great.
Yeah, no problem. Sorry I couldn't scrounge up more than that, but it sounds like the FBI can't even track the asshole down. I'm thinking he's dead.
What a shame that would be.
Yeah, one less scumbag in the world.
He had no idea the level of scumbag the guy was. That I suspected he'd been the one to ultimately murder my brother, the one who'd tormented Cade with a blowtorch. How miserably I could have made him suffer for it. I appreciate your efforts. If you manage to come up with anything else, don't hesitate to contact me.
Always. Take care.
On those parting words, I hung up the phone. Fuck. It was probably for the best that I hadn't found him. Getting involved in FBI matters would throw a bullseye on my back, and I certainly didn't need that right then. Not when I already held a man skating the edge of death. It would only be a matter of time before Barletta succumbed. Besides, I'd done enough to exact my brother's revenge, hadn't I? The motive for Cademan's kidnapping had been clear to me all those years ago, when I'd first learned of how important my father's discovery was, and to what lengths he'd gone to protect it. The ability to cure the incurable amounted to millions of dollars. Even in the incapable hands of criminals, the science could have been sold. Replicated. If not for the protection of the rooks and the university, I'd have probably been just as much at risk as my brother had been. It was a shame my father had never acknowledged the ruthlessness, the depraved lengths others would go in order to claim his discovery. Perhaps if he'd extended the protection offered to him, my brother would have still been around. For the sake of not drawing any attention to myself, I decided to pause my pursuit of Angelo De Luca. I'd soon have a dead body to deal with anyway. Barletta was enough for now. My phone buzzed, and I looked down to see a text from Lippincott.
I hope to see you at this evening's gala.
Groaning, I sent nothing more than a thumbs up in response. I hated the fucking dog and pony show of academic funding. Why the rich couldn't quietly hand over their money without the need for caviar and banal conversation was beyond me. Before packing up and heading back to my campus quarters to get ready for the evening's crap crusade, I decided to check on Barletta one more time. The quiet, as I made my way down the dark corridor, marked the first sign that something was wrong. The sound of my footsteps against the concrete should have surely triggered his moaning and pleas. It was the blood pooling out of the cell into the corridor that had me slowing my steps. I finally reached his cell, where he lay slumped to the side, his back pressed against the bars of the cage. Frowning, I withdrew the key and unlocked the door, rounding his body to find an absolute macabre scene. One mangled eyeball lay popped from its socket against his cheek. The other had been gouged, completely mutilated, oozing blood down his face. Clutched in his hand lay a crude-looking tool, a sharpened piece of stone in the same aged shade as the surrounding walls. I flicked on the light of my phone and trailed it over the cell, not finding any divots or broken stone. How he'd gotten his hands on it left me puzzled. At the same time, it made sense how he'd managed the scratches on his body, even if finding him this way didn't add up. Suicide of this manner was extremely uncommon. The worm sought water to mate and reproduce, to live. I thought back on the coroner's report for Lilia's mother and how she'd slit her wrists. Was this evolution, or was something sinister at play? As I crouched beside him, the stone in his hand snagged my attention again. Earlier, when I'd offered him the drink, I'd noticed a long scratch on his inside wrist. From the angle he faced, he would have tipped the cup back with his right hand. I'd also seen him write with his right hand. Double-checking, I twisted his wrist to confirm the scratch there. Yet the stone to gouge his eyes rested in his left hand. Just a theory on my part, but it seemed his right hand was dominant and would have been the one to gouge his eye, had he done it to himself. Fuck. I had to cast my inspections aside and hustle, as the parasites would only stay contained within the body for so long before escaping for a water source. Grabbing a stretcher parked at the opposite end of the corridor, I hustled back to the room and awkwardly hoisted Barletta's body onto it. A glance at my watch showed it was just after 7. Enough time to deal with Barletta and head to the dreaded gala. I wheeled Barletta to a separate room down the hallway, one that housed a large silver hydrotherapy tank I'd purchased. A hose sat just inside of it, and I cranked on the water, allowing it to fill. I flipped on the naked bulb overhead, then slid Barletta's body from the stretcher and into the tank, where he slumped to the bottom. The water rose quickly, swallowing his legs, arms, and finally his face. Angling my cell phone's flashlight over the water, I watched as, without fail, small black objects wriggled out of his mouth and nose. A few down by his legs had undoubtedly emerged from his anus, somehow finding their way out of his clothes. Over a dozen parasites emerged from the corpse, darting around the water in frantic search of a mate. His belly shifted with more of them. As I stared down at the horrific scene, I couldn't help but think of how far I'd come from the boy who'd cowered in the supply closet, hearing voices of the dead. The frightened teenager who couldn't stand to be in the same room as a corpse. It was my brother's demise that had pulled me from those fears and into the macabre fascination I'd developed with death. My curiosities had led me into that cold refrigerator, where my father kept bodies he'd been asked to examine. And it was there, staring into the eyes of one of the decedents, that I imagined my brother laid out. The visual had somehow humanized the monsters inside my head, and I no longer feared them. The more I learned about the human body, the less I heard those terrifying voices, until at some point they faded entirely. Only a blissful silence. after a good couple of hours. Most of the worms will have escaped into the water, which I would collect and allow them to mate with the other worms I'd harvested. I'd then take him to the autopsy room and open him up to collect brain and liver samples, where the toxin would be most potent for isolation and purification. Each time the worms infected, their toxins became more specific for human genetics, and the elixirs became more effective. The effects lasted longer. Unfortunately, I was running out of test subjects. I'd been able to justify tracking down the men who'd taken my brother, but with news of Angelo missing, I could only pray that the latest elixir was successful. Otherwise, I'd have to seek another victim.
Chapter 38. Lilia. Just breathe. Just breathe. I sat at the back of the campus bus, hoping to avoid any and all attention. Spencer had offered to pick me up at my dorm, but that felt a little too date-like. In retrospect, given the number of eyeballs glued to me right then, I regretted the decision. My legs shook incessantly beneath the puffy tulle as the bus jostled about, and I prayed one of my boobs wouldn't pop loose, because wouldn't that have been the icing on the shit cake? The bus slowed to a stop at Carmody Hall. One more stop and I'd finally break free of the ogling from the other students returning to their dorms after the evening classes. They weren't even discreet about it, for crying out loud, and I had to keep my attention toward the window just to prevent any confrontational remarks flying out of my mouth. The bus jolted into motion again, my breasts jiggling and testing the integrity of every stitch in the bodice. Kudos to Missy for whatever magical thread she'd used to keep it all together. The next stop was Jackstone Hall, but because the campus bus didn't travel as far as Watts Creek Hall, where the gala was to be held, I'd have to cut through Canterbury Gardens. It was a 10-minute walk past the old mausoleum. A little creepy. Of course, I wasn't entirely stupid. I had pepper spray tucked inside the ribbon at my waist, the one Jada had given me just before I left for Dracadia. When the bus finally stopped again, I damned near leapt to my feet. Mercifully, Missy had let me get away with black embellished flats when I told her how accident-prone I was in heels. Not entirely enthused, but she'd conceded without much more than a quiet grumble.
"Can I get your number?"
one of the passengers asked as I breezed past. Probably a freshman. I didn't bother to turn and look at him as I hustled off the bus before the anxiety rattling through me could shake me off balance and send me tumbling to my face. Once on solid ground, I closed my eyes and took a breath, but at the sound of the door closing, I spun around and knocked on the glass. Face scrunched with obvious irritation, the bus driver opened the door again. "When is the last pickup?" I asked, fidgeting with the tulle of my skirt. "You're looking at it." "Wait, you don't come through here again?" "Nope." "You need a ride back? You'll have to call a Drac-Uber."
"Drac-Uber? Of all the cheesy names. Is it like Uber?"
"Something like that." She slammed the door shut on a waft of air that ruffled my hair and took off down the street. I hadn't brought any cash with me to call for a ride. Shit. Temperatures had dipped slightly, but the humiliation of the bus ride kept me nice and toasty as I stepped onto the path of the gardens. My dress rustled over the concrete, and I was grateful Missy couldn't see me right then, or she'd have probably thrown a fit about the hem getting sawed. Overhead, the moon shone high, thank goodness, or it would have been a pitch-black trek around what had once served as a burial site. Walking alone in the dark was nothing new for me. I'd done it so many times back at home, it didn't even feel abnormal or unusual. While I'd definitely run into my share of weirdos, I'd never actually been harmed. However, I'd never worn a gorgeous ball gown with my breasts half sticking out of it before. What few stray hairs hung from the loose French twist I'd clipped up stood on end, my muscles poised and ready to draw the pepper spray if necessary. The gardens were peaceful, though. Serene. It felt a little like walking through a pristine old English courtyard in a dream, with all the perfectly trimmed hedges, vibrant mums, and colorful late summer blooms. I couldn't wait to see the university in the thick of autumn. How beautiful it could look with all of the fiery oranges and reds. The sound of crunching leaves sent me skidding to a halt, and I spun around, eyes scanning the surrounding shrubs and trees. I watched for any sign of movement, but found nothing. Not wanting to stick around, I kept on through the garden,
ears peaked for any other sound. Light up ahead caught my eye, and I could make out what looked like a glass-enclosed solarium. My heart caught in my throat, and I stopped. From where I stood, I sighted a crowd of people in their fancy dresses and tuxedos, the crisp white tablecloths below the soft glow of candles. The place oozed wealth. Oh, God, what am I doing? It was too fancy, way too fancy for me. I turned to leave, but paused when my gaze snagged on someone standing just outside of the solarium. Cigarette in hand, he stared up at the stars, but the sight of him in a perfectly tailored black coat and slacks made my heart catch in my throat. Bramwell. Mascara'd eyes clenched, I sucked in three deep breaths and swayed when a wave of dizziness swept over me. Shaking it off, I kept my eyes glued to Professor Bramwell's back, and I stepped out of the garden onto the solarium's patio, only a few feet from where he stood. As if sensing my presence, he kicked his head to the side, not yet having turned to look at me, and panic wound in my stomach as I took in his perfect profile and that model-worthy jawline. Hide, my brain urged. Don't let him see you like this. The moment he turned around, though, it was too late. Our eyes locked. A chill wound down my spine as I took in the expression on his face. Not an exchange between student and professor, but like two strangers. Intentional and intense. I wanted to crawl inside myself and become invisible for the way his gaze devoured me. His broad shoulders tapered to a fit waist, and he stood with a drink in one hand, a cigarette in the other. I'd never seen him look so casual, yet imposing at the same time. The man filled his suit with a sharp, lethal grace and an air of authority. An utterly thigh-clenching sight. The world around me turned silent, a dark galaxy, spinning with a gravitational force that drew me closer. Every nerve kindled to life under his stare, and my skin prickled.
Lilia?
The voice from behind hit me like a cold bucket of water, and I turned to find Spencer, also decked out in a tuxedo. His eyes scanned me up and down, wide with fascination.
Jesus, you look... wow.
A glance over my shoulder showed Professor Bramwell turning back toward the stars, undoubtedly disinterested in our meeting.
Did you walk here?
Spencer asked, looking past me toward the garden. Snapping out of my daze, I shook my head. No, campus bus.
You took the campus bus?
His brows winged up and he shook his head.
Okay, it's settled. I'm driving you home.
You have a car? I thought students weren't permitted to have cars on the island. Wearing a smug grin, he shrugged.
Most aren't. My family actually lives on the island, though. If you have residents here or your staff, you can get a pass.
Must be nice. Not that I had a car, or could afford one, for that matter.
Come on, you gotta be freezing.
He offered a bent arm, into which I reluctantly slipped mine. Just to clarify, we're friends. Spencer chuckled, shaking his head.
Who hurt you?
What does that mean?
Well, I've never met someone so adamant about avoiding a date.
You're not calling this a date, are you? Frowning, I pulled my arm back and he gripped it, holding it in his.
Relax. We are two friends attending a charity gala.
Good. Having established that, the tension in my muscles eased a bit. What's the charity for, anyway?
A pissing match for the wealthy, mostly. Pardon my French.
I prefer your French. It makes me feel less... posh.
The gala ultimately funds Professor Bramwell's research, under the guise of conservation breeding.
Another glance over my shoulder showed Professor Bramwell was no longer there, as Spencer led me through one of the glass doors.
If I recall from the invitation, it's to help maintain genetic diversity for the moths that are indigenous to the island. I guess it was a requirement for using the Salmonyx moths in research.
The air warmed to a very toasty temperature as we stepped inside the solarium. Ah, so replace the moths and the environment that are killed in the lab.
Precisely.
Spencer said, leading me farther into the elegantly decorated room. Black candelabras flickered about the space, giving a soft luminescence. A sea of elaborate gowns and tuxedos had my stomach in knots, despite fitting in for the style of dress. In that respect, Missy did well. aside from a few younger faces, Kendall being one of them, as she sent me a death stare from where she stood beside one of the rugby guys that I recognized from the other day in the dining hall. The crowd seemed to be mostly older folks, which I supposed made sense at a charity event. The stiff elegance was somewhat softened by the piano music that filled the pause between all the many conversations going on around me. At the center of the room stood a glass enclosure that reached up to the high-arched glass ceiling, like an enormous version of the glass domes from our midnight lab, and inside, hundreds of the black Somnix moths fluttered about.
"I'll grab us a drink,"
Spencer said, but his words hardly registered as I released his arm and made my way over to the moths, fascinated by them. Their black wings indicated no sign of infection, as I'd learned in Midnight Lab. One moth had perched itself against the glass, and when I pressed a finger there, its wings flitted. More moths flocked to my side of the glass, as if drawn there. I glanced down to see the light reflecting off the little star flowers on my dress.
"Drawn to light."
At the sound of the deep voice, I turned to see Professor Bramwell staring through the glass only a couple feet away from me. The sight of him stirred my pulse just as before. There are so many of them. Where did they come from?
"Purchased from a breeder here on Dracadia. The university's penance for using them to study Noctisoma. Dracadia is the only place these moths call home, so their numbers could deplete if we're not careful."
"They're the organism's natural host, though, aren't they?"
"Yes, but not every moth is doomed to be infected. Only the curious ones."
With a glass of champagne in hand, he stepped closer toward me, yet careful to keep the distance between us, it seemed, as he came to a stop at some invisible line.
"Do you see the latch in the ceiling up there?"
Peering upward showed a glass door of sorts at the roof of the solarium, a gap between the panes where it didn't fuse as tightly as the others. "Yes."
"They'll open at the end of dinner and release the moths into the wild."
"I'm sure the bats are looking forward to it." His lips curved upward, and the dark chuckle that followed had my stomach as much a flutter as the moths.
"Fortunately, the uninfected ones are a bit savvier at survival. Although that would be a much more merciful end, don't you think?"
"I suppose it would. I couldn't imagine being an insect, pursued by so many dangerous things." I dared a glance and found him looking at my lips where I'd reapplied the lipstick before leaving my dorm.
"You need to pay closer attention, Miss Vespertine."
He twisted around as if scanning the room, which compelled me to do the same. Spencer, staring at me from across the room, wore a curious expression.
"I see you and Spencer are hitting it off."
Professor Bramwell kicked back his drink, and as one of the uniformed women passed with a tray of champagne flutes, signaled for another. I couldn't help but notice the flirtatious smile on her face as he took the drink without even bothering so much as a glance at her. She turned toward me, her brows winged up over striking gray eyes.
"Voulez-vous boire un verre, mademoiselle?"
While I recognized the sultry words as French, one of the native languages spoken by locals on the island, I had no idea what she'd asked. "I'm sorry, I don't entirely understand. Are you asking if I'd like a drink?" A smile slanted her lips when she nodded. I answered with a polite, "No, thank you." Her smile lingered another moment before she slid her attention back toward Professor Bramwell, whose eyes were on me then.
"Si vous comprenez, retrouvez-moi dans le placard dans 10 minutes.
A muscle in his jaw twitched, and he dragged his attention from me to the server.
"Je comprends, et je décline votre offre."
The smooth cadence of his voice held an alluring fluency that left me both intrigued and wanting more. Whatever he said to her, though, seemed to knock her composure off kilter, as the server rolled her shoulders back, offered a clipped nod, and sauntered off. I stared after her, puzzling their interaction.
"You never responded to my inquiry,"
Professor Bramwell said, interrupting my thoughts, and sipped his new glass of champagne. My mind wound back to his last comment about hitting it off with Spencer. "We're just friends."
"Friends,"
he echoed as his eyes cruised south down the length of my gown and back. I'd been ogled by men since I'd first sprouted breasts, but Bramwell's gaze held something different, something I wanted to study and unravel without all the other people in the room. An unspoken command and the unsettling tension that had my bones vibrating. An intricate maze I wanted to get lost inside. Warmth rushed beneath my skin, undoubtedly leaving me flushed. It was strange seeing him that way, without a book in his hand or antsy to stride off somewhere. It almost seemed as if he didn't know what to do with himself in the setting. Not unlike me. To be honest, I feel a little out of place here. I glanced around, catching the stares of a few guests, men and women. It feels like everyone knows I'm dirt poor.
You think they're staring at you because you're poor?
He buried a smirk in his drink and tipped back a long swill that emptied the glass. His jaw flexed with the clenching of his teeth as he swallowed.
The wealthy possess an insatiable appetite for the rare and priceless. They stare because you're the only thing worth staring at.
The air turned heady, tickling my chest with each intoxicating inhale. Cheeks flushed, I turned away and caught sight of Spencer, waving me over to where he stood among a few men, including his father. I didn't want to go to Spencer, though. I wanted to stay there with my professor, fighting to catch my breath. Beside me, the moths fluttered about, their movements mirroring the sensation in my stomach every time the man opened his mouth.
Go, Miss Vespertine.
Professor Bramwell whispered, his proximity setting my nerves aflame.
You're far too young to live a life without mistakes.
On those parting words, he strode off with an air of arrogance that made my knees weak. My head urged me to follow him. I wanted to. Instead, I made my way over to Spencer, who handed off a dark purple-colored drink. Studying it, I frowned at the deep color through which I couldn't see the bottom of the glass. What is this? I gave it a sniff, noting nothing more than a sweet berry scent.
Just punch,
he said, and took a sip.
If you think the good provost will let me get away with spiking it, think again.
Mouth dry after the encounter with Professor Bramwell, I took a sip, and the sweet flavor hit my tongue with an unexpected delight. It's really good. I took another sip, trying to place the taste of it. What's it made out of?
No idea, but I guarantee a shot of rum would have made it even better.
I've never tried rum.
Oh, we have to remedy that. Not tonight, obviously.
With a slight nudge to my arm, he urged me back toward the group of men with whom he was standing a moment ago.
I want to introduce you to my father.
The thought of coming face to face with a man who had participated in the research study that may or may not have resulted in my mother's death felt a bit heavy for the evening. While I'd have loved to have needled his brain for some answers, the dress had me feeling off guard. I don't know.
It's fine. He's had a few drinks. It's probably the best time to meet him.
Perhaps if he got drunk enough, he'd forget ever seeing me there. With reluctance, I followed after Spencer, stealing another sip of my drink.
Father, I would like to introduce you to someone. This is my friend, Lilia.
A flicker of consternation flashed over the provost's face before he smiled and reached out a hand toward me.
Lilia, it's a pleasure to meet you. Spencer tells me you're a pre-med major as well.
Well, I haven't exactly decided on med school yet. I'm wavering a bit.
I'm sorry for my strange behavior that day in the dining hall. I didn't mean to be rude. You simply took me by surprise.
How so?
You remind me of someone I knew.
Oh? Who? I played, knowing damn well who. While the question tickled the tip of my tongue, begging me to ask him what he knew about the deaths of those six women, I bit it back. Waving his hand in dismissal, he chuckled.
I see so many faces pass through this university, it's hard to pinpoint where or who exactly. Strange how our brains work that way, isn't it?
Very strange. You seem familiar to me as well, I lied. Another one of the servers, a young, bright-eyed blonde, stepped toward us and placed a hand on the provost's arm in a way that struck me as a bit intimate. She leaned in to whisper something in his ear, and I caught his gentle squeeze of her hand. He nodded and released her.
Dinner is to be served soon. Lilia, will you join us at our table?
Sure. Even if I'd have preferred to sit with the moths. The provost led our small group toward a round table that sat eight, and everyone settled into a chair, Spencer beside me. An older man I didn't recognize offered a wink as he slid into the seat to my left, instantly kicking up my discomfort. An equally aged woman, dressed in embellished jewels, claimed the seat on the other side of him. Across from us, the provost took his seat, stealing the occasional glance toward me and only breaking the maddening habit when a man passed behind him, patting him on the shoulder.
May I ask how old you are, young lady?
The man beside me leaned toward me just enough that my defenses reared up again. I cleared my throat and took another sip of my drink before setting it down on the table. 20.
Such a wonderful age. I remember being 20 years old, attending this very university. Rugby captain.
Wow, that's great.
Charles Dandridge,
he said, holding out a pudgy hand toward me. Lilia, I answered, returning his handshake.
It is a pleasure to make your acquaintance, Lilia.
His gaze dipped low, and there was no doubt in my mind where it had landed.
I was quite the ladies' man back then.
I am sure. I cleared my throat again and turned away from him. In doing so, I caught sight of Professor Gilchrist making her way toward our table. Don't sit here. Please don't sit here. Please don't sit here. To my utter dismay, she took the seat beside the provost, and the smile on her face faded the moment her gaze landed on me. With a sheepish, tight-lipped smile, I gave a small wisp of a wave. Of course, she didn't wave back. A forced smile creased her eyes as she slid into the chair. In as subtle a move as I could muster, I turned toward Spencer.
I didn't know Gilchrist would be here,
I whispered. My mind flashed back to the day in the alley when I'd seen the two of them together.
Yeah, she kind of arranged the gala. She's the one who negotiated all of these moths. Stupid, really. They're just going to go back into circulation, and we'll be plucking their carcasses out of cages in no time.
That's horrible. Speaking of horrible, the guy next to me is kind of creepy,
I whispered in an even lower tone.
He's harmless. Stinking rich, but harmless. An old friend of my dad's.
Beyond Spencer, a figure strode toward the table, and my heart caught in my throat for the second time that evening when Professor Bramwell eased into the seat two down from Spencer. When his eyes found me again, a rush of warmth shot through my veins. The chair between him and Spencer remained empty, and it was only then I took notice that everyone at the table had a companion, except him. My eyes darted toward the provost, who quickly looked away from me. I leaned into Spencer again.
Are your dad? I mean, is your mom?
She's home, sick. Which just means she took too many sleeping pills again.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, happens a lot.
I wasn't sure if Gilchrist was hesitating to say. I shook my head.
Never mind.
In a subtle gesture, he covered his mouth with his hand and leaned in closer.
They actually can't stand each other. Kind of makes this really awkward.
At a flash of her cupping Spencer's crotch, I nodded.
I can imagine.
In the quiet that followed, I stared down at the elaborate table setting. 3 forks on the left, 2 knives and a spoon on the right. A smaller fork and spoon above my plate, and some odd-looking pronged utensil I'd never seen before. Our waiter brought out a variety of appetizers that had my eyes popping. Tuna tartare, halibut ceviche, seared octopus, salmon latke. I had no freaking clue what any of them were, but sampled one of the salmon latkes only because they were bite-sized. Next course consisted of a shellfish bisque, and as I reached for my silverware, I caught Professor Bramwell staring at me. I tried not to notice the seat beside him, still absent of a date.
Dr. Bramwell.
The man to my left grumbled around his food.
While in Vegas last month, I visited a restaurant where you can order caterpillar fungus soup for a mere $700 a bowl. Supposed to have amazing healing properties, a natural cancer treatment, and an aphrodisiac.
He elbowed me under the table and I frowned.
What are your thoughts?
For a man who supposedly had an obscene amount of money, he certainly lacked table etiquette in the way he slurped his soup. I turned my attention toward Professor Bramwell, who stared back at the man with undisguised disinterest. It made me wonder if they knew each other outside of the gala, because I could almost feel the hostile chemistry between them.
Ophiocordyceps sinensis, a cousin of the cordyceps species that turns ants into zombies. Harmless to humans, but if you're foolish enough to pay $700 for what you think is the next panacea, then I'd wonder if it did indeed infect your brain.
Biting my lip failed to contain the quiet chuckle in my throat. Undoubtedly rattled, the man beside me bristled and humphed and sat back in his chair.
Isn't that the basis of your research, Professor? My research focuses on a single toxin and its effect on autoimmune response. No, I do not believe it is the cure-all that has the power to improve your sex life. I suspect not even Viagra has that much ambition.
Eyes wide, I snapped my gaze to the plate in front of me. They had to have known each other. Professor Bramwell certainly had a coarse edge to his social skills, but I'd never heard him outwardly insult someone. Mrs. Dandridge coughed into her napkin, and I couldn't tell if she ended her fit on a snicker or a choke. Provost Lippincott let out a nervous chuckle.
Deverick has quite a sense of humor.
An air of discomfort clung to his words, but the tension remained thick. I stole another glance at Professor Bramwell, who downed another glass of champagne, those copper eyes landing on me the moment he set the glass on the table. A strange pull tugged at my chest. I couldn't explain it. Even as abrasive as he was, I found him utterly captivating, magnetic. When the main lobster course arrived, I kept light conversation with Spencer about the food and interesting spots on Dracadia where I'd yet to venture. Still, I couldn't help stealing more glances at Professor Bramwell, every one of them met by his unabashed stare. My dress scratched at my skin where it felt too tight, caging me in, as my skin flushed and my stomach fluttered. The blonde server from before made a second appearance and, with a gentle touch of his shoulder, whispered something in Lippincott's ear. When she glanced back at me, I realized I'd been staring a bit too intently, and clearing my throat, I snapped my gaze toward my hands and my lap, catching Dandridge gripping his crotch under the table beside me in a crass adjustment.
"Excuse me for a moment,"
Provost Lippincott said, sliding his chair back and depositing his napkin on the table. The moment he strode out of the dining room after the server, the cramping tension in my stomach loosened a bit, reminding me how uneasy I felt around him. The reprieve was short-lived, though, as only a few minutes later the provost returned to his seat, and my anxiety cranked a notch tighter than before. Dessert arrived. Mine was a tiny square of a cheesecake with some kind of berry topping. Each person at the table served something different.
"They know how to skimp out, don't they?"
Spencer snorted and popped what looked like a cheesecake-filled strawberry into his mouth. Toying with my dessert fork, I willed myself not to look at Bramwell again. It was ridiculous and perhaps even inappropriate, but part of me didn't care. Professor Bramwell had taken notice of me, and as much as I'd originally loathed the idea of going to the gala, I was glad that I had. I took a bite of the delicious berry cheesecake, the flavor reminding me of the drink I'd had earlier. As I licked the sauce from my lips, I caught Professor Bramwell turning away. My attention swung toward Gilchrist, who glared at me from across the table. Her lips snarled in disapproval.
"Where are you from?"
Mr. Dandridge asked, and I inwardly cringed at the question. Perhaps telling him the truth would inspire him to leave me alone, though. "Covington," I said, as unflinching as I could muster, and forced myself not to fidget too much when his face pinched in a frown.
"Covington? That horrible city in Massachusetts?"
"Yeah."
"Good God. How did you end up here, at Dracadia?"
"Decent test scores and grades."
"Everyone at Dracadia has decent test scores and grades."
He leaned into me, close enough that I could feel his hot breath against my neck.
"Or was it extracurricular activities that gave you an edge over your fellow classmates, hmm?"
Beneath the tablecloth, his hand landed on my thigh.
"I have a number of connections here as well."
My muscles lurched with the urge to slap him, my cheeks so red with anger and humiliation I could hardly spit out a word. It had to be written all over my face. A cold paralysis settled in my bones, though. "Do something," my head urged me, but my body felt stiff and heavy with shock. As his hand moved higher, I finally reached under the table and gripped his wrist, eyes stinging with the threat of tears. He took hold of my hand and drew it to his thigh, and my muscles trembled to pull myself from his grasp. The entire silent struggle seemingly oblivious to the others who went about eating their dessert without a single word. Not even Spencer seemed to be privy as he smiled at me before popping another strawberry into his mouth.
"I wonder what your wife would think if she knew you were groping the young girl beside you, Charles."
Everyone at the table gasped in unison as Professor Bramwell casually took a sip of a new glass of champagne.
Or do the two of you partake in extramarital activities, which gives you a pass, hmm?
Professor Bramwell's tone carried an edge of mocking that echoed Mr. Dandridge's from moments ago. And I didn't know what was more shocking, what he'd said or that he'd heard Dandridge's words to begin with. The grip of my thigh quickly fell away, and while I was relieved, my face burned with the shame of not having stood up for myself.
Deverick!
Provost Lippincott shot to his feet and threw his napkin onto the table.
Is it your intent to insult my guests at a very important gala which happens to fund your research? Is it your intent to ignore the fact that another of your guests is clearly uncomfortable? Or is it only the wealthy donors whose comfort matters most, Edward? Enough of this, please.
The provost said.
Yes, I've had quite enough.
Bramwell turned his attention to Spencer.
Be a gentleman and switch seats with her.
His gaze flicked my way and hardened into something almost murderous when it shifted beyond me.
And if you value your anatomy, I'd strongly advise you keep your hands to yourself, Mr. Dandridge.
With that, Professor Bramwell tossed his napkin onto the table and pushed to his feet. My heart sank to my stomach, watching him stride toward the exit.
Is that a threat? Did he just threaten me, Edward?
Dandridge shifted in his seat, knocking me in the arm.
No, it wasn't a threat.
Provost Lippincott let out that nervous chuckle again.
He absolutely did. I heard it. Everyone at the table heard it.
Can it, Charles? His wife finally said beside him. You are an embarrassment. I'd heard it, though. Professor Bramwell had threatened him. For me. In all of my 20 years, no one had ever stood up for me. No one had ever intervened on my behalf. Compelled to go after him, I stood up from my chair, and the moment I did, a surge of dizziness had me wavering backward.
Lily?
Spencer grabbed my arm, steadying me.
Are you okay?
No, I feel strange.
Do you need some fresh air?
Mouth pinched tight to avoid throwing up, I nodded. Lowering my gaze to avoid all the prying eyes, I allowed Spencer to lead me out of the solarium and back onto the patio. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Stop. You made my father uncomfortable. I'm thrilled.
Spencer snorted. Another wave hit me and I swayed on my feet. Whoa. Are you sure there wasn't alcohol in that drink?
I'm pretty sure there wasn't. Of course, my tolerance has grown a bit in the last few years. Do you need some water?
Running a hand over my forehead, I nodded.
Stay right here. I'll be back in a sec.
A blur had settled into the edges of my view. Looking around showed Professor Bramwell nowhere in sight. Another bout of vertigo hit, and I stumbled to the side, catching my hand on one of the heavy iron chairs sitting out on the patio. The sound of rustling, off in the garden, snapped my attention that way. I scanned over what I could see through the shrubs, but found nothing there. The blur in my vision intensified, and as the view shifted, I stumbled again.
Whoa!
Spencer said, swiping up my arm before I could tumble to my ass. He handed me the glass of water, and in spite of not really wanting to drink anything, with my stomach gurgling the way it did, I took a couple sips.
Better?
Not really.
Let's walk and see if the air and muscle movement helps.
Hooking his arm in mine, he led me onto the garden path, and I kept an eye out for Bramwell, or whatever had made that noise. The path wobbled, but the movement did help a small bit.
I'm sorry. I should have switched seats with you back there. Did Dandridge really touch you?
The question had me grimacing at the memory of him gripping my thigh under the table. Yes, he was really creepy.
Forgive me. I can honestly say he's never groped me under the table, so I didn't know how creepy he could be.
I just want to forget it all.
Everything?
A look of hurt in his eyes sent another round of nausea to my stomach. I turned away and caught sight of a figure standing in front of the mausoleum off in the distance. Long black cape. The plague mask. My imagination, or was it real? A sharp breath shot out of me and I jerked back into Spencer. A quick look back at him and I stepped to the side, clearing my throat.
What is it?
He asked. By the mausoleum. I pointed in that direction and had to shake my head to dislodge the double vision corrupting my view. When the scene settled back into a single blurry form, there was nothing there. I saw... there was... someone in a mask.
A mask?
I keep seeing him. Confusion clouded my head. Someone following me in a mask, like... the kind doctors wore during the plague.
Plague mask?
Brows pinched, he recoiled.
That's weird. You saw him near the mausoleum?
Yes, it was just another zap of dizziness. Standing there a moment ago, staring. He unhooked his arm from mine, and when he stepped in that direction, I reached out for his arm. What are you doing? My voice carried a slight slur.
Just stay here. I'm going to check it out.
No, you don't... never just go check it out. Tension pulsed inside my skull and I winced, rubbing the heel of my palm over the ache. Ignoring me, he stepped in that direction again and I clutched his arm harder. Spencer, what if... it's dangerous.
If someone is harassing you, it needs to stop. Stay put.
No, that's a bad idea. He frowned, staring back at me, as if just now catching on that this thing with me was getting worse.
Fine. Come on.
We stepped off the path into the gardens, toward the mausoleum. The figure appeared again, and I pointed, skidding to a halt. There! Spencer yanked his hand free of my grip and strode that way.
Hey, asshole! You got a fucking problem?
Spencer! I wanted to follow, but damn it, I wasn't even sure I could manage 10 steps, let alone defend myself. Instead, I backed toward the path, watching Spencer through a fog as he disappeared around the mausoleum. Seconds passed. The air turned colder. A minute, 2 minutes. Spencer! I whisper-yelled, feeling completely vulnerable. Alone. I awkwardly tugged the pepper spray from my waistband, teetering again with the movement. Why I didn't think to give it to him, I didn't know, but right then, I was glad I had it. Get help. Go get help. I turned back toward the path, but the world continued to spin, the dizziness thick as I careened and staggered around the shrubs. The surroundings had somehow shifted. I'd lost my sense of direction, and worse, my view was waning. Blackness crawled into my periphery, creating a narrow field of view as I scrambled for the familiar path. One slow blink. I opened my eyes to the dark sky above me, the stars twinkling high and bright. Had I fallen? I couldn't remember. Slow blink. When I opened my eyes again, a terrifying figure stood above me, the plague mask. I wanted to scream, but nothing came out. The figure tipped its head, studying me. Take the mask off. I willed myself to reach up, but my arm felt like lead weights. Leave me alone. The figure snapped its attention away as if it heard something. Slow blink. My body jostled as something slid beneath my back. Help me. Nothing more than a weak mewling that mirrored the softness in my bones. I opened my eyes to see the world moving too fast, the sight twisting my stomach. I closed my eyes again. Warmth engulfed me, wonderful, relaxing warmth, and the scent of leather and cologne. I roused to find a gloved hand on a gear shift, the monotonous purr of an engine. Lifting my head to see who'd taken me captive, I was greeted by a light far too bright through the window behind them. I groaned and screwed my eyes shut, seeing only jagged flashes behind my eyelids. Perhaps I was dying. Perhaps I would die by the end of the night. Death felt like a warm blanket. Chapter 39. Lilia. I awoke with a start and jolted upright. At the restriction of my arm, I looked down through the dim light to see it tethered by a handcuff to the steel frame of a bed. My gaze shifted to the dress I wore, which carried small flecks of... food? Confusion settled over me, my head throbbing with the task of trying to catch up to my eyeballs. Piano music, moths, dinner, Spencer, Bramwell... the masked man. A gurgling nausea churned in my gut as I slowly trailed my gaze over the surrounding room. My vision wobbled with the ache in my brain. The darkness, The stone walls chipped with age and covered in moss. A gravelly floor, the air so cold it felt like I'd been cast into a tomb. The heavy, damp scent of earth and decay invading my sinuses. And the bars. Not a room. It was a cell, a prison. No, no. He'd captured me. The man in the mask. My pulse raced as I thought about all those sick serial killer movies where the victim ended up chained in a basement. The horror of that goaded my escape, and I tugged at the cuffs, trying to slip my hand through it. Skin raw and burning, I shook with the effort, folding my hands to make it as small as I could. The ache in my skull intensified with my stress, and I abandoned my escape to rub my throbbing temples.
You could just ask for a key.
At the sound of the deep voice, I sucked in a sharp breath, and the shadows to my right shifted as a form came into view. A strange current snaked over my skin, devouring my fear as I took in the sight of him. Black slacks, white button-down shirt, devastatingly handsome face. The pressure in the room seemed to change as his presence pervaded the space like a dark storm. Professor Bramwell? My head spun with a million possibilities, nothing springing forth a familiar memory of what had happened the night before. My professor kidnapping me? I thought back on the way he'd defended me at dinner. No way. Still, tension wound in my stomach. As he strode toward me, my fight or flight buzzing with the urge to do one or the other, light glinted off a metal key as he held it up for me to see. The sleek black leather gloves he wore had me questioning things. Perhaps I'd watched too many crime shows, but there was only one reason that came to mind for why someone would wear black gloves. He knelt down beside me, and at the click of the handcuff, I yanked my hand free and backed myself to the headboard, away from him. You cuffed me?
You apparently sleepwalk.
He pushed up from the floor, and hands tucked in his pockets, made his way toward the cell door, which he pushed open as if to let me know I was free to leave. And the prison?
I couldn't exactly take you to my office or your dorm. These cells are connected to my lab. The Midnight Lab is two floors above us.
You don't store corpses in here, do you?
No, I don't store corpses in here.
My stomach settled only slightly, seeing as nothing made any sense still. What happened?
You were drugged.
I rubbed at the red mark that had been left on my wrist from the cuff. How? With what?
Nox berries.
Air whooshed out of me. Nox berries. Shit. How do you know? He crossed his arms and leaned against the iron bars of the cell.
You had a few bouts of vomiting in the night. I performed a litmus test on it. One specific for the enzymatic reaction found only in the berries.
Oh, God. Not only was the thought of that humiliating, but the tickle in my stomach and chest told me he might have been looking at round two any second. So I'm infected with Noctisoma?
Just as every moth isn't doomed for infection, neither is every Noxberry.
How do you know, though? The moment I said the words, the answer came to me. You studied my puke?
There would have been trace larvae. Eggs. I saw neither under the scope.
Again, the thought of Professor Bramwell studying my puke somehow seemed worse than him handcuffing me to a bed inside what must have been a prison at one time. Crazy. But that was my state of mind right then. Oh, God. I don't remember anything. Throwing up, being brought here.
Noxberries are a very strong hallucinogenic, more powerful than any natural drug in existence. It's only their association with Noctisoma that keeps them from being abused more frequently. Otherwise, I suspect they'd be making the rounds at frat parties across campus.
I rubbed a hand across my forehead, trying to imagine at what point in the evening I might have been drugged. The cheesecake, it had berries. And the drink, it had tasted like the cheesecake. Why would anyone drug me? Brow furrowed, he drew in a deep breath, and, God, strike me down. I glimpsed the deep grooves of muscle in his chest where he'd unbuttoned his shirt. It brought to mind the day I'd spied on him throwing knives in the woods. The muscles in his arms, the sweat. But he was damned good with those knives. Would he throw knives at me? Unfortunately, a thick fog still muddled my head, making it impossible to stay a step ahead of the man if he did have something sinister up his sleeve.
Why is inconsequential at the moment. The question you should be asking right now is who?
Was this where he confessed that it was him? I don't suppose you have any idea. Again, he stuffed his hands into his pockets and paced toward the wall across from me.
Spencer Lippincott was accused of giving another student Knoxberries, after which she claimed he assaulted her.
Mel.
Yes.
He turned and paced toward the cell bars again, back and forth, as he had a tendency to do whenever he lectured. She never mentioned the berries, neither did he. Pausing his pacing, he shot me a look as if to say, "Come on, Lilia, you're smarter than that." Ordinarily I was, but in addition to feeling woozy, I was freaking starving for some reason.
He wouldn't have, for obvious reasons, and I suspect she didn't know.
How do you know? His jaw shifted, his eyes unreadable as he stared at me. He wasn't going to tell me. Arms crossed with stubborn resistance, I shook my head. Spencer wouldn't do that.
I told you, nice and genuine don't mix when it comes to Spencer. And now, right back into a scandal.
How?
Cameras caught me carrying you away.
The torment of that visual sliced through my concentration. Me passed out in his arms as he carried me through the gardens. The gardens. Yes, I remember that much. Walking through the gardens with Spencer and a man in a mask. Canterbury Garden has cameras? He rubbed his jaw as if frustrated with my lack of brain power, as if it was my fault. Whatever I'd been given may not have infected me, but it had surely killed a few brain cells.
The lot where my car was parked has cameras.
No, I'm asking because I saw someone in the garden, a man wearing a bird mask.
Bird mask?
Not a bird mask. One of those plague masks that docs used to wear. Frowning again, he stared back at me.
You saw someone in a plague mask?
Yes, he was standing by the mausoleum. An irritating, slow drip of memories trickled in, feeding me one scene at a time. Then Spencer ran off toward him. I got dizzy and fell. The man in the mask was standing over me.
Did Spencer see this masked attacker?
Had he? Or was he only going after him for my benefit? I can't say for sure.
Did he take his mask off at any point?
No, I kept blacking out. Did you see him when you found me?
Unfortunately, no. I heard a scream. When I found you, you were lying passed out. There was no one else. Did he touch you at all?
The question carried a hard edge, like the thought of such a thing angered him. Touch me? Not that I recalled. I couldn't summon so much as the memory of fingertips on my skin. I shook my head, flexing way too many brain cells trying to remember a single detail past that mask. I swear I saw him.
The Knoxberries are fairly strong. Perhaps you were...
I've seen him before, all over campus, watching me. He stared off as if deep in thought.
You sleepwalk.
It wasn't a question, yet I answered anyway. Yes.
Do you take any medication?
No.
Do you find yourself tired during the day?
I knew where he was going with that, and with a roll of my eyes, I answered, sometimes. Look, I'm not hallucinating the guy, okay?
I'm merely teasing out a possibility, Miss Vespertine. Have you come across anything plague-related recently? Perhaps a reading? A picture of the mask?
I had read about Dr. Sterling when I'd first arrived on campus. Admittedly, that was about the time I first began seeing the man in the mask. I have, yes, I answered honestly. You think I am hallucinating him?
I'm only suggesting that exhaustion can fuck with your head. I know this from experience.
Maybe I had dreamed it up. The sickening possibility that it might have been nothing more than another hallucination smothered the argument cocked at the back of my throat. If that's the case, then I feel silly about all of this.
Hallucinations don't drug individuals. There's still the mystery of who accomplished that, and I suspect that I will find myself on the chopping block once again.
But they didn't catch you bringing me here.
I brought you through the cadaver entrance, so no.
God, the thought of that twisted my stomach inside out. but I was alive and untouched. Although as disturbing as it may have been, the visual of him touching me while I lay passed out didn't quite sicken me as much as it probably should have. So it's only my word that would get you in trouble? It wasn't a question. And just like that, my horribly manipulative mind shifted back into gear. Because it was in that moment I realized that I had something on Professor Bramwell. A bargaining chip. Eyes narrowed. He did that annoying studying thing where I couldn't read what the hell was going on in his head. Maybe he wanted to throttle me for saying that aloud, or throw knives at my skull. Make me your assistant and I won't speak a word, I quickly added.
No. I told you before, I don't take assistance.
Arms crossed again, he ran his thumb over his bottom lip in a way I found mesmerizing, unintentionally seductive.
I can offer you money. A significant amount.
No. The answer came out faster than I'd have expected at the prospect of money, especially when I desperately needed to catch up on B's tuition. But I desperately needed to know more about the worms, too, and faster than I was learning in Noctacadia. I'll leave. I'll take off for a few days and you won't have me here to clear your name. I didn't even know who was talking at that point. Maybe I had been infected, and the parasite was steering the ship, because no way in hell was Lilia Vespertine that bold. His dark chuckle tickled the back of my neck, and his eyes held a ruthless glint that slid through my bones.
My, you are a wicked little moth.
I hated the way my stomach fluttered when he said that. I want to work in your lab. Not the midnight lab, not some lame duck lab, where I'm assigned to washing dishes and making auger. I want to work on the toxin with you, and I want to be paid in cash for my time. I swallowed a gulp. While on the outside, I might have looked cool and calm, my insides were screaming right then. He tipped his head, and I caught a flicker of intrigue in that coppery gaze.
Look at you. Such a bold moth. Far bolder than I give you credit for.
Make me your assistant, and I'll make you the hero this time.
Or I can lock you in the cell and toss the key. No one would find you. And after a while, no one would care.
I'd forgotten the part where I hadn't yet confirmed whether or not he was a psycho killer. Damn, the fog still thick on my brain. My gaze flicked to the cracked cell door and back to him. In a pathetic effort to beat him to it, I scrambled over annoying tulle and satin, getting caught up in the skirt of my dress for a moment and dashed toward my only exit. The moment I reached the barred door, the world tilted on its axis, and the iron spindles crashed into my spine. His gloved hand pressed into my throat, sealing off the oxygen. A rush of adrenaline pounded through me, colliding with an inexplicable titillation that had my nerves flaring like live wires.
You will take the money that I'm offering, and you will not say a word about this. Do you understand?
Eyes trained on my lips. He leaned into his grip, his tongue sweeping over the edge of his teeth. Mouth gaped for air. I stared back at him, studying the flicker of fascination that slipped over his otherwise stern expression. Chaos exploded inside my head as I tried to make sense of the fact that my professor had his hand on my throat, had just threatened to lock me in a cell and toss the key, and that I still had no intentions of accepting his offer. Perhaps I was the psycho. After all, I could have negotiated the answers I was looking for about my mother, and maybe he would have told me. But maybe he'd have lied, too. Or subjected me to some three-questions-only rule. I only just managed to shake my head. Imprisoning me doesn't cover your ass. His hand squeezed harder with his frustration.
Fucking hell. Why do you have to be stubborn?
Jaw flexing with his rage, he released me on a growl. I threw my hands to my neck, rubbing the spot where he'd choked me, and bent forward as a cough spluttered out of me. It's a curse, but I promise not to annoy you and to be helpful. And I won't say a word to anyone about it. No one has to know that I'm working for you. Another frustrated growl told me I was whittling him down.
I knew the moment you arrived at this school that you were going to be a major fucking headache for me.
I straightened, ignoring the annoying blossom of hope that warmed my chest. That's a yes, then? He ran his hands through his hair, ruffling the ordinarily thick and smoothed strands into a disheveled mess that I found painfully attractive.
Fine. You'll work as my assistant. You'll do as I say. You will not touch anything or venture where you're not wanted. You use the cadaver entrance only, and should you decide to break any of my rules or speak of this arrangement to anyone, I will make you regret the moment you tried to blackmail me.
Did you just threaten me? Like with death that time? He didn't flinch beneath the accusation.
Don't fuck with me, Miss Vespertine. You want to play hardball? Know that mine are made of steel.
That sounds painful. His lips twitched as if he were trying to hold back a smile.
Leave through the back entrance, and don't return until tomorrow at 8 p.m.
Can I ask one more question before I go? He let out an almost pained groan.
What?
Are there any buildings on this campus that don't have cameras?
Chapter 40, Beverick. The girl was a problem. An incredibly beautiful but annoying problem. That she could stand there, making bold demands while staring me straight in the eye, had me wishing I could either throttle or kiss her. I couldn't tell which compelled me more than the other. It had been shitty of me to manipulate her into thinking that what she'd seen was nothing but a hallucination, but I'd had to. Lying to her was for her own safety. She had no idea what world of corruption and mayhem she'd be inviting in by getting herself tangled up with the Rooks. I'd find out who the hell was harassing her and deal with it. My guess was Spencer. As a new member, he had yet to learn that ceremonial garb wasn't some fucking Halloween scare. Wearing those masks outside of the roost brought heavy consequences, and I would see to it that the offender was adequately punished. Especially since I didn't like the idea of someone fucking with her, and I was pretty sure that was exactly what Spencer had in mind, having drugged her. The kid had done it before, and with as delectable as Lilia looked in that dress, I suspected the asshole hadn't been able to help himself. A realization that irritated the shit out of me. Since having found that video on her phone, I'd made a point of ignoring the girl, an impossibility as a general rule, particularly when she wore those short skirts that danced around what I imagined to be a pert ass. When she'd arrived at the gala the night before, though, looking like a walking aphrodisiac topped with whipped cream, and catching the eye of every swinging dick she passed, something had snapped inside of me. I'd never wanted anything so badly in my life. Calling her beautiful was like calling the sun lukewarm. She'd blazed like the hottest part of a flame in that dress, and fuck me, I'd felt the heat. I knocked on Lippincott's door and, at a sound of acknowledgement from the other side, stepped into his office. Papers lay scattered about his desk, along with empty water bottles and discarded granola bar wrappers. I took a seat in the chair across from him, swallowing back the urge to tell him how much I wanted to beat the shit out of his son. Beverick, what a nice surprise. The flat tone of his voice told me the little incident with Dandridge at the gala still rankled him. I'd always loathed the pervy bastard, a former dean at the university, who'd never even attempted to rein in his affinity for younger women. The man was approaching 72 years old, and I'd watched his hand grow more thighs than a starving man at an all-you-can-eat chicken buffet. It just so happened he groped the wrong thigh that night. What brings you out of your crypt? I thought you might want to know that someone was seen wearing ceremonial garb outside of the roost. I suspect it might have been your son. He reached for a bottle of Tums on the other side of his computer and popped two of them. When was this? Just after I left the gala. He was roaming about the gardens. Ah, yes. The night you gave Spencer a black eye. I frowned. I didn't lay a hand on your son. He insists that you were the one wearing the ceremonial garb and that he caught you without the mask. He said you punched him in the face and knocked him out cold. He has a lovely black eye to mark the occasion. While I had seen Spencer run off toward the mausoleum, I never pursued him, nor laid so much as a finger on him. As I said, I never touched your son. But cameras did pick up on you carrying Miss Vespertine to your vehicle. She'd passed out. I was merely trying to get her somewhere safe. Leaning back in his chair, he ran his fingers through his hair and blew out a sharp breath. Dean Langmore is getting her side of the story, and for your sake, Deverick, you better pray the girl doesn't throw you under the bus. One accusation is fairly easy to contain. Two is a bit more challenging, and it would entirely fuck up the opportunity to move toward clinical trials if you were to be investigated for inappropriate conduct with a student. So, my advice? Stay the fuck away from this girl, in particular. Unrattled by his comments, I tipped my head. What exactly are you accusing me of? Everyone at that table could damn near feel what was going on between the two of you. I highly doubted that. If the unscrupulous prick sitting next to her had felt even a fraction of what I was feeling right then, he'd have made a better effort to keep his hands from getting severed. Dandridge was nothing more than a waste of human body parts and precious oxygen. Fucking hell. Are you crazy? He prattled on, his voice growing annoyingly hostile. And then you have the audacity to insult our most generous donor in front of his wife. He was fondling Miss Vespertine's thigh while you were nibbling on your goddamn cheesecake. I don't care if he threw her on the table and ate her pussy for dessert. The man has damn near carried this project with his funding. He can do whatever the hell he wants. I clenched my teeth to hold back the rage until a spasm of pain shot to my skull. The visual he'd planted in my head had my control completely unraveled, and for the sake of dignity and reputation, I kept my hands gripping the chair, calming the urge to grab Lippincott by the throat and tear out his windpipe. Whatever the hell was going on with me had shifted into something unrecognizable, something dark and violent, and at the center of it was a troublesome girl with her ridiculous berry lips that I wanted to bite, who'd somehow corrupted me. A crafty little shit who'd bulldozed right through my defenses. You are brilliant, Deverick. Perhaps the most brilliant man I know. Do not let some lowly Covington girl fuck up years of research and innovation. I'm tempted to have her removed from your class and placed somewhere else just to eliminate the temptation. Exhaling a rage-filled breath, I rolled my shoulders back. That won't be necessary. Good. I'll consider Spencer's black eye a misunderstanding, and I will inquire about who the fuck decided it was a good idea to wear ceremonial garb as a costume. In the meantime, go back to your work. Only the small modicum of respect I had for the man kept me from telling him to shove his misunderstanding and opinions up his ass and fuck himself. Years ago, after my father had finally given up on Cademan, Lippincott organized something of a task force, comprised of a few tight connections of his, to track down one of the men who kidnapped my brother. He'd always been kind to Cademan throughout our childhood, treating him like something of a son before Spencer had come along. I'd always felt bad for him after the night Cademan and I had stumbled upon our father fucking his wife during one of the Lippincott's dinner parties. Hadn't been much the poor bastard could have done, seeing as it was her money and status that had given him any clout at all at the university. He was horribly pathetic when it came to his wife, but the man had undoubtedly climbed the ranks and amassed enough power to avoid his shit list. I didn't need the headache of pissing him off, not when my research had begun to make major strides. And he had been right about one thing. I didn't need Lilia fucking things up for me. Not because she was some lowly Covington girl, as he'd said, but because she was the only thing in the last 10 years that had managed to distract me from my research, which meant agreeing to let her work in my lab might have been the dumbest decision I'd ever made.
Chapter 41. Lilia. It was clear Dean Langmore didn't believe me as he stared back at me with skepticism shimmering in his eyes. Not that I could blame him, really. Playing ignorant wasn't something I enjoyed, but for the sake of securing my place in Bramwell's lab, I was willing to risk scrutiny.
So, let me get this straight,
he said, flattening his hands against his paper-cluttered desk.
You were attacked in Canterbury Gardens by some masked man. A bird mask, is that correct?
Yes, sir, like a plague mask. If it was true that I'd only hallucinated the mask, I didn't see any harm in mentioning